Hi, moms. I'm Becca Carnahan.
And I'm Marie Tremblay.
We're two mom friends and career development professionals here to help you answer that big question. What do I want to be when I grow up?
Just because we're moms now doesn't mean we're all the way grown up yet.
I know I'm not.
Me neither. And we want to give you permission to grow, change, and evolve as a parent and professional.
By sharing real stories from real moms, we're going to help you navigate the motherhood identity shift, career changes, work-life balance questions, and more.
Are you ready to keep growing up with us?
Yes? Then let's do this. We are so excited to have Dr. Stephanie Thrower here with us. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
And let me tell you all a little bit about Stephanie before we turn it over to her to share more about her story. So Dr. Stephanie Thrower is a psychologist and a career coach who helps working parents break the burnout cycle so they feel more engaged, creative, and connected as professionals and parents. I know this is speaking directly to all of you out there. Dr. Thrower has a unique combination of expertise as a social justice educator, career development enthusiast, and maternal mental health therapist. These lenses shape her approach in supporting clients breakthrough burnout and perfectionism, and in order to achieve clarity, find purpose, and confidently set boundaries in their work. And if it's okay, I'm going to call you Stephanie instead of Dr. Thrower, because we also know Stephanie very well as a member of our Career Clarity program. So is it okay if I call you Stephanie?
Absolutely.
Okay. We are super excited to have you. Thank you for being here. And I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Stephanie. What did I miss as part of your bio? Tell us more about your career story.
Yeah. I mean, you captured a lot there. I'm a psychologist. I have a private practice that focuses on mental health at the intersection of motherhood and career. And I have a very long and diverse educational experience. Like, my first degree is in sports psychology. I got a lot of training in trauma and anxiety in my doctoral program, as well as in vocational psychology. But I also did a lot of research on training white therapists and mental health providers to be more racially responsive. So I have a lot of interests. And I'm interested in identity and career development, social justice, and even mental performance, which I think plays a part in all of these things.
Yes.
And of course, the experience of motherhood. And I really thought I was headed towards a research or academic track. That's where I was going. And then I had my daughter and things really took a left turn. And I just realized pretty quickly, like, she was weeks old, that I needed to make some changes, and became a business owner, which I never expected. And I needed a different context to go through the motherhood development process. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Oh, we hear that. And it's really interesting to look back on all the different interests that you've had and how you've been able to merge them together, because it was sports psychology, you said, right, that you studied early on, and you were a gymnast growing up, right? So did that really influence your decision to think about sports psychology early on?
Yeah. I mean, so I was a gymnast as a kid, and then in college. And after college, I was kind of at this, you know, I was really driving myself to do pre-med. I was going to go all the way and become a psychiatrist, you know, like type A type stuff, right? And just really struggling. And when I was done, I think I was pretty burnt out after undergrad, and started coaching gymnastics. And when I started coaching gymnastics down in Arizona, I was really like the beam coach, which is kind of like being a therapist. It's a lot of talking with young girls and, you know, taking them through these like stepwise processes to do more and more difficult, scary things. But it's a lot of talking
and dealing with the fear. Yeah.
A lot of crying. And actually, yeah. So at that point, I met a sports psychologist down at the University of Arizona who like wrote one of the first textbooks on sports psychology. And I think at the time I made PowerPoints for her. And
Okay.
that I think it was like my, in some ways, kind of always knew I was going to go towards psychology, but this was like my back door or my side door into fully thinking about psychology was being in this sports psych place. So, yeah.
I'm always super interested because if anyone follows me on Instagram, I talk about gymnastics all the time because my daughter is a little gymnast and she's really amazing at it. So I like to pick Stephanie's brain about gymnastics along the way, but I really like this connection that you're making between being that beam coach and being the therapist and in the work that you do right now, which really bridges that gap too between like therapy and coaching and how you're helping people to develop the tools, work through the fear, the perfectionism, which we'll certainly talk about too, which is a good thing on Beam, but maybe not necessarily a good thing in life, the perfectionism part.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's a segue to mothers, like the beam coach, the balance for moms.
Oh, yes. Oh,
Yeah.
yes.
Stephanie, one of the topics that you help women with in your work is burnout. It's also a term that can be confusing for a lot of people. So how can people tell if they're burned out?
There's a little bit of controversy about that confusion specifically. So the World Health Organization says that burnout asserts that burnout is a vocational experience, like it's embedded in work, and that it's not a disease, it's not a mental health disorder, it's a syndrome, which means it's a set of symptoms. It doesn't require treatment for medical necessity like other disorders do, like depression, anxiety, and so forth. So the three main components are feelings of exhaustion. They describe it as cynicism. Sometimes it makes more sense to think of it as, for me, as like disillusionment in the system or in the demands, and then reduced efficacy. So you're not doing it. You don't feel like you're doing as well at your job, even though you might actually still be doing well. There's been some shift and some pushback on saying two things. They're looking at other areas where burnout exists, like parenting. So there's a big study in 2020 that talked about parental burnout, and it was really, parenting isn't defined as a vocation, but there's always these ways, right, in which there's a lot of like work and tasks involved in it. And then the other piece is sometimes people who are burnt out and may not be depressed or have other disorders, they may actually experience impairment in their functioning. And so they might argue that it should be a disorder. And I think that the one of the experts who helps us measure burnout, Christina Maslach, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right. She One argument she makes is burnout isn't about the individual, it's about the systems. And so she's concerned about putting the blame on individuals when it's a system issue. And then there's like this last little definition of burnout that I like. It added another layer for me in my own understanding. So Josh Cohen is a psychoanalyst and a therapist who focuses on burnout. And he says, you feel burnout when you've exhausted all your internal resources, yet you cannot free yourself of the nervous compulsion to go on regardless.
Ooh.
I know, right? Like,
Yeah.
and who, I mean, it sounds kind of fancier than it needs to, but yeah, like you're tapped, but you keep going. And that totally describes burnout for me, you know.
Yes. And gosh, in parenthood, and it's really interesting the connection that you make between, okay, this is related to vocation. And parenthood traditionally isn't considered a vocation. But it is work. Let's call it what it is. It's unpaid work. There are tasks involved. So this idea of feeling tapped out, but you go on anyway, that's parenthood of feeling. But we don't want to feel like we're tapped out all the time. That's not a good feeling. And we don't. Like you said, putting the blame on people for their own burnout, that's not helpful. So, what are the tools that you recommend to people in terms of how they advocate for themselves or take care of themselves or make changes to the system to work through this idea of burnout, which a lot of us are feeling based on the definitions that you described?
Yeah, I think that there's phases of burnout recovery. And there's a wonderful book by the Nagoski sisters. I think the title is Burnout. It has the word burnout a bunch across the front cover. And they do a great job. They describe it as sort of like, let's stop the bleeding first. And stopping the bleeding is managing stress differently. Right. So we all have, we're all biological creatures and mammals that have responses to stress that we feel like some things that we feel like some emails we get feel sometimes like life and death. Like we can feel a zing in our body. Right. And yeah, those emails can be extremely stressful, but we shouldn't, when we're registering them as like it's an emergency. I think that the chronic experience of that we know impacts our physiology, right? We're dumping adrenaline and cortisol through our bodies. And we just, like, I remember being in grad school learning about stress and being like, this is so stressful to learn. So the stopping the bleeding part is finding ways to cope with stress on a daily basis. So they really advocate moving your bodies, finding connection, finding self-expression. They even have like a nice little table and a workbook that can help you think about what's right for you, for like almost like shaking off and resetting ourselves and being like, it's not an emergency. It is stressful, but I'm okay and I'm safe, right? And then the second phase is it's kind of more like finding where the source of the bleeding is, right? And that a lot of that is about combating perfectionism. My favorite part, I think, is about digging in and understanding what matters most to you, right? And so starting to like live your life more in alignment with your values. We know that's good for our mental health. But we know that that's going to positively impact our careers too. Like a lot of career coaches know that. And setting stronger boundaries. So those kinds of pieces. And I think what you just said too about thinking about system change, I think learning how to advocate for like others is a great way of how we learn how to advocate for ourselves. There's something about parenting that really, I have no problem advocating for my child at the pediatrician, but I'm like, why don't I ask questions at my doctor? So I think there's something advocacy. Oftentimes we do better when we first pr get to practice for other people. And then the last phase is one of the hardest, which is interesting. They put it last in the book, is like improving our self-compassion. And it's integrated in all three parts. But they have like three chapters, like self-compassion is hard, part one, self-compassion. And I can't tell you how many clients I've worked with where I start to introduce the idea of self-compassion and they're just like ready to close the computer on me, you know?
Why is it so hard? Is it society? Like, why can't we be compassionate for ourselves when we're so able to do it for our kids, our husband, our friends? Isn't it shocking?
I mean, it is shocking. I think we have overdeveloped critical thinking skills, and we are best at applying them on ourselves. And I think a lot of it is anxiety related. It's like if I can pick apart all the things about myself, like somehow that can keep me safe from the world. You know, like people aren't going to criticize. If I know what's bad about me, then like at least that's not going to be a surprise if someone gives me criticism,
Oh,
right?
interesting. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
I mean, it's so close to this idea of burnout, but in addition to burnout, another issue that many women bump up against is perfectionism. I've been there for sure. From your experience, how does perfectionism impair our ability to understand what kind of work we want to do?
Totally. I mean, yeah, as a former gymnast, as someone who just keeps investing in my own education, like, yeah, I think that that perfectionism is just very rooted in a lot of my experiences. But I think before talking about it, how it's bad, because I think everyone has kind of heard the trend, like, oh, it's perfectionism is not good for you, right? But I also feel like, I think cognitively, it's very linked to other processes that we need to maybe strive for excellence. So like critical thinking is really important on and like helping us learn and grow skills, because we do to some extent need to like determine what we think is good and what we think is not good, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't think we can like surgically remove perfectionism as a thing completely, right? But it does help us justify, well, I have to have it. I wouldn't be as good at my stuff in life if I wasn't a perfectionist. And I think that so there's one author, Jennifer Kemp, who has a nice little workbook on combating perfectionism. And I love what she says, that like focusing on the behaviors, the perfectionistic behaviors that get in the way of you living life like you want to be living life, right? And so most people are going to identify self-criticism, unrealistic expectations, you know, like when you set a goal, but then you're like, I actually have a secret goal too, right?
Yep.
That I'm not going to tell anyone. And if I don't meet the secret goal, then I still will be disappointed, right? I think that, and I actually think, you know, it's helpful to understand that perfectionism is a manifestation of anxiety. I think sometimes we might relate it the other way around, like, oh, my perfectionism gives me anxiety, versus I'm just coping with anxiety and maybe these things are going to help.
I like the permission that you give us to the perfectionism on its face is not just a terrible thing. There are elements of perfectionism that really do help us to grow and excel and learn and push ourselves. Those are good things. It's a very empowering way to look at perfectionism, as someone who felt like I was a perfectionist very much growing up, and then felt like I had to be like, oh, I can't be a perfectionist anymore. That's a bad thing. That's a bad word. Actually going back and saying like, you know, there's actually elements of that that did really help me to grow and succeed. And that's wonderful. And now just being aware of some of the behaviors or the feelings so that it doesn't color everything I do or color my view of the world. It's an important distinction. So I appreciate you bringing that up, that this is not just a black and white thing.
Totally. I think that perfectionism can, I think where we get really stuck is when we are aligning our lives with values we don't even totally care about, you know? And then it's comparing ourselves, constantly comparing ourselves.
Social media doesn't
help. I know. I was just going to say, I'm like, my phone's right here. I'm like, yep. You know, you don't even, I think we sell like comparison to others is one of the not so healthy. That and exposure to trauma are things that are really difficult on our mental health. And how much of that is on, are we scrolling all the time, right? Self-comparison and exposure to really horrible things, right? And so, yeah, I think it's just an interesting thing to reflect on. What am I using this critical thinking for? Am I using it to keep? And I think that's where self-compassion is so critical, to come in and say, hey, listen, like, mistakes are good. You know, one of the things that perfectionism is trying to do is to run from like fear of failure and shame. And I think fear of failure is a big one for me that I it's funny, speaking of gymnastics, when I was in my sports psych degree, my thesis was on the experience of fear in gymnastics. And just, you know, because on brand with being a beam coach.
Yeah.
And I really thought like fear of injury was going to be the driving themes that came out. And it was really like fear of failure. Because it was like, oh, well, if I hurt myself, that will mean I have failed at this other goal. And that wasn't really the thing. It was like, no, it's the fear of failure that was driving. And that was like more powerful and more, I don't know, scary. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. I think a lot of people, gymnasts and non-gymnasts alike, can resonate with that one. Stephanie, I think we mentioned this early on that we, Marie and I, have had the pleasure of getting to know you outside of the podcast as well as a member of our Career Clarity program, which we've just been so lucky to have you. You've been a wonderful part of our community of other mid-career parents. So I'm wondering if you can share with our listeners what's been a really important takeaway for you of the Career Clarity program.
I've just been surprised by the quality of content and coaching and even like the group support that I experience in the calls. And then the other, like, I've also just really appreciated, like, as a career nerd, like, I just love that it's clear that this comes from your experience, but also from your knowledge. And like, there's like career theory baked into. I think my biggest takeaway is like, I think it's just that you've modeled a program that's not cookie cutter, that actually prioritizes supporting like the people that work with you, like supporting their authentic growth and what grows from within them. And so I think it's really awesome to be able to see someone else do that and actually watch, like, as people tap into their career intuition and find connection with it, the more they do that, the more the path is so right for them.
Yeah.
And they come across successes that neither of us even expected to see. And I see that in the group as well.
Yeah. I love the surprises. I love it when we're able to work through, like you mentioned, using career theory behind this, but it has to be about the individual. There's no cookie cutter approach to work, to life, to success. That's a really key part of how we think about this program, is that there's not one definition of success. There just isn't. And so helping people to define what success looks like to them, and then the pieces start to fall into place a bit more about how can we use some strategies to go get it. But you brought up the idea of values early on, and I think that's really critical to how Marie and I think about career development. Is like, how do you define success for yourself? How do you then, based, which is oftentimes very much rooted in your values, and then what are the steps you take to get there? So thank you, Stephanie, for sharing that with us, because we really love having you and working with you as you continue to grow and evolve as a professional, as a parent, as we all do.
Yeah. And Stephanie, our favorite question to ask our guests: what does continuing to grow up mean to you?
I think that, not to get on my soapbox, but I think that our society really underappreciates the importance of development in general. Like, I think that there's, even for children, there's this expectation that people will come baked and ready to serve, right? Like, and I think that that's where we end up both as parents really struggling, or as educators, or even as therapists, struggling with not being in process with people versus, okay, well, we did this intervention and you should be good, right? And I think this is especially true as women, being in our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, there's such a stagnation of growth. Our expectation is that we are totally baked. You know, we're done. And it's time to be of service with our wisdom and what we've done, right? And I don't really know why we are so, like, development scares us so much, you know? But, you know, like, fear of aging, fear of all that stuff makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, I think being parents has really echo, like, it helps us slow down and appreciate development on a much slower scale. in some way. I mean, it's quite fast, but it sometimes feels so frustrating to like witness, right? Like it felt like it took years for my children to play together. And I sort of expect, like, I had my second child. I was like, all right, done. Siblings, go.
There's two of you. Off you go.
When I brought back my second one, my first one was 2 years old, and he told me, "So when is the baby gonna go back to the hospital?" Never.
Yeah, no, this is a lifelong situation here. So, Stephanie, I know that people will want to hear more from you. We're going to include all of the links back to your work and some books that you mentioned too. I think we should link those in the show notes here so that people can reference these books. But where can folks find you and follow along with your work?
Yeah, I think the best place is my Instagram profile will have like any news of anything, and it has the links for my website. So that my Instagram profile is Coaching with Dr. Thrower. And also my LinkedIn profile too will have all my information. And I think I might start a group in April focusing on purpose over perfectionism. So if
Fearless.
anyone has any interest, so just that those are good places to find me.
Awesome. Yeah. So keep in touch with Stephanie and all the work that she's doing. Instagram, LinkedIn, all those links will be in the show notes. So Stephanie, thank you so much for being there, for being part of our community, for all the work that you're doing. We really appreciate you and all the goodness that you're putting out into the world.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to When Mommy Grows Up. If you're interested in learning more about how career coaching can help you along your journey of growing up as a mom and professional, head over to nextchaptercareers.us, where you'll also find the free Just Right job match quiz.
You can contact us at podcast@nextchaptercareers.us if you have questions, comments, or want to share your story for some coaching on the show. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review and make sure you follow us on your favorite podcast platform. We'll be here every week with coaching stories and two mom friends in your corner.